Welcome to episode 1 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we discuss the ramifications of the term neoclassical. June 20th was Free RPG Day, what did you do? And we also look at thoughts on Palladium's books. Again, welcome to Season 1, Episode 1 of RPG Circus. My name is Jeff, and I will be one of your ringmasters for this show. In addition, we have Mark and Zach.
How's it going?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Well, I guess right now we should probably discuss a little bit about who we are, because all these people are saying, why should we listen to you? So why don't one of you guys start first, and then I'll end up.
Go ahead, Mark. We'll do it alphabetically.
Okay. actually, that would be Jeff then. All right. I am 24. I've been gaming since I was about 16. And I have a fairly large RPG section that comes from working at a game store for about 2 years. And so I've played all different kinds of games, but primarily mostly the OGL games. Currently, I've got a 4th edition game that's on hold, and I've been trying to start up a Savage Worlds game that has thus far failed to get off the ground. That's about it.
Well, you also run which blog?
Oh, yeah. That's important, I guess. I write Dice Monkey at dicemonkey.wordpress.com.
Okay. Oh, my turn. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Zach. I run RPG Blog 2, www.rpgblog2.com. I've played an awful lot of games. I'm at the ripe old age of 29, Midwestern family guy. Played pretty much everything. Some of my favorites include Castles and Crusades, Amber, I've been grooving pretty hard on the new Pathfinder, like a lot of the indie stuff, Burning Wheel, Flying Mice, a lot of the smaller publishers as well. So kind of got a nice eclectic taste, I think, on it. So, and I'm excited to be doing this show.
And as your, the announcer for this show for now, my name's Jeff, and I run the Bone Scroll at bonescroll.net. And, well, let's see. I think I'm older than all of you guys. I've been gaming now for, I think I calculated it out to 25 plus years. It's actually kind of scary.
Yikes. You got any stories left to tell?
You know, yeah. I mean, you got to remember, a lot of my early stories, I was, you know, 4th, 5th grade. So, yeah, I have a lot of stories to tell still.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've gamed a lot, and I ran the, you know, honestly, it's just, one thing led to another, and here I am. So I guess that's where we're gonna start. And I think we should go ahead and, you know, put up our tents and let's start with some news. And I believe, Zach, you had some news you wanted to give us.
Yeah, interesting piece I saw the other day on Necromancer Games, the company that used to have the third edition rules, first edition feel mantra there. Since then, they've kind of been, I guess you'd say, in limbo, with, you know, between the 4th edition's GSL and, you know, 3rd edition, that you still have the open gaming license, but D&D 3.5 itself isn't out. Clark Peterson, who runs the company, and we'll have a link to this in the show notes, was just talking about some of the products they hope to do for the rest of the year. I know a lot of folks were looking forward to some 4th edition print products from them, and it sounds like they're really not seeing that as a real strong viable option at this point. Looks like there's a possibly a 4th edition print product or two in the mix. Looks like they're still going to be doing some Pathfinder, but it's kind of an interesting update on the company and just where they see 4th edition at this time and what they see their market outlook for. So you know, that's a company a lot of people you know, really esteem. So it's interesting looking into what they're doing.
Yeah, I think I've got a few products from them.
Mm-hmm. Really good box sets, really good, I guess, legacy products, if you want to call them that.
So basically, they're not going to be releasing anything? Or just
Reading on here, Clark Peterson said, I'm still hopeful to do Pathfinder print products and perhaps a key 4th edition print product or two, perhaps a 4th edition Tome of Horrors, which is one of their best known 3.5 books. But ability to produce the 4th edition print stuff is proving to be difficult. He goes in, he's saying that he's not sure what the market is for it, or for as far as retailers and distributors. So there's a number of possible options he can go into, and you know, anytime you talk about 4th edition, there's 5,000 opinions under the sun on this or that. So
yeah, and I mean, there's three of us here, and I'm sure we all have our own opinions on.
And I'm not insane enough to go into that on the first podcast. So, but yeah, I definitely think folks want to take a look at that in our show notes. Interesting look, kind of just how one publisher sees everything. By no means a definitive opinion, but definitely an interesting one.
Well, I'll have to take a look at that link, because I've been out of it a little bit. Not so out of it not to know that, we were recording this podcast on June 20th, and in 8 days, on June 28th, if you plan to go to Gen Con and plan to pre-register, you need to do it by June 28th.
Good catch.
Yeah, well, you know, they actually, I didn't have to catch it. They sent, here's the weird thing. It's like they sent it out to me because I'm on the mailing list because, well, I'm already registered for it, which kind of counter, which to me is kind of counter. It's like, wait a minute. Yeah. If you're registered at the site for registration, you would know when pre-registration ends. I guess they just hope that people like us, I guess, go out and say, hey, you know, did you pre-register yet for Gen Con? Do you plan on going? You know, and,
On a side note,
I have to tell you, there is a local convention here, and for the people who don't know, I'm located in Phoenix, Arizona, the Valley of the Sunstroke, as they call it. There's a local like science fiction book kind of game convention thing that I found out's happening here, and the tickets, I can't quite make out how they do the tickets, because it's like if you're one type of member, it's one price. If it's another type of member, it's another price. But either way, it's like $80 or $100 for a entrance fee. And I'm like, check me if I'm wrong, but Gen Con is cheaper.
Yeah,
I figure that, right?
Yeah, because I know if you pre-register, it's only $68, which, you know, some people say that's an absorbent amount. But considering it's 4 days, that's not that bad.
And it's Gen Con.
And it is, for those who don't know, it is August 13th through the 16th. Of 2009 this year. I think by my reckoning that makes it 53 days until it starts. So, is there any other news that anyone knows about? I'm just kind of out of grasp here.
Swords and Wizardry, the retro clone or neoclassical game, depending on term you wish to use there.
And we'll get into that.
Oh, yeah. is looking at a possible distribution of their game, like on store shelves, not just through lulu.com. So that's a definite
that's news,
definite interesting development. Yeah.
Excellent.
And that's a couple days old now, but being as it's our first show here,
you know,
definitely worth looking into.
You never know with the way the news is. It's like someone could not have caught it. Well,
that's right.
I think that's probably about all the news we have time for right now, because we want to get into Ring One. And in Ring One, I will bring you the term neoclassical. Robinson Games, actually on Twitter, first off, is when I first saw it, he was asking, well, would people object to using this term? And he has a very interesting stance on it. His stance was is that he didn't like the word old school for some of the newer games out there. And I can kind of see his point. You know, I mean, when people say old school, you really have this mentality that someone's dusting off their books to play a game, and his point of view is that there's a lot of newer material out there that, you know, we're playing, that people are producing stuff that is kind of that old school vibe, but has more of a modern, you know, maybe modern mechanics, modern rules.
Definitely more modern presentation, perhaps.
Modern presentation, or just plain, let's face it, new rule books. And I really kind of agree with them on the one hand, but on the other hand, I'm always of the impression that as soon as you label something, you limit what it can do. And I guess that's why I don't even... even the word old school, I'm not a big fan of. But, you know, as a term for marketing a product, I actually kind of like the word neoclassical. Because, you know, people say, well, it was a classical game, and this is kind of the same, but it's a modern representation, without actually saying it's, you know, the next greatest thing since sliced bread. So I'm actually surprisingly on board with the concept of calling something neoclassical, besides the fact that it just sounds cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not a big fan of retro clone, just because, one, retro makes it sound like your adventurers are running around in bell bottoms, and two, it makes it also the clone makes it sound like you're basically trying to make an identical game to D&D, which isn't necessarily true. You could have a retro clone of, you know, plenty of other things, and as long as it has that same feel. But clone seems like you're trying to make it a copy.
Some of the earlier ones were, but...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like it as much as anything I've heard for it. You know, I'm kind of the mind, you know, it doesn't matter what you call them so long as you play them, but, you know, people like to have those terms of references. It's when it gets to be this strict definition, I think, that, you know, you get into trouble when people start, you know, having a litmus test for what is and isn't and everything, so... And, you know, you don't want unnecessary labels, too. I think a lot of RPG theory shot itself in the foot like that, too, just using it in inaccessible terms. But neoclassical seems pretty well-grounded, pretty descriptive, so, yeah, no problems with it here.
Yeah, I mean, I was originally, like, dismayed at the concept, but the more I thought about it, it's just like you guys. It's like, okay, well, you know, I can see where someone can actually come for that, and I can see where... Like you said, it doesn't carry the stigma of, oh, it's a retro clone, or it's an old school redo, or, you know, I can actually see where as a, I want to say it's, to me, it's more of a marketing term, and I'm not the world's greatest marketeer, don't get me wrong, but I'm a firm believer in saying that certain terms, the market people develop those things. It's not really, people do it for market presence, not necessarily for anything else, and I also agree with you there, Zach. On the thing about, you know, we sometimes generate terms for no reason, especially like you said in the whole game theory area. You know, I'm a little behind in that. It's like I kind of just don't read the game. I never got into the game theorist stuff because it's just like I think they got a little too uppity on themselves. You know, they get
a little too pretentious. When I first started the Dice Monkey blog, one of my first posts was talking about the GNS theory, the gamist, narrativist, simulationist, and I wrote about what it was, explaining it, and I instantly got a post from somebody that was like, "You've completely gotten this wrong. You know nothing about what GNS actually means," and got really, really mad at me, and I was. Like, I didn't do anything to you.
it's a sacred cow for a lot of people still. But, you know, it's you know, if it helps people, great. But, you know, as far as accessibility, I think that ship has sailed, you know. No two people can agree about anything about it. So, you know, it's kind of like, well, guys, if you were trying to make something usable to the average gamer here, I think you've kind of over – or even the average designer to a point. It's like – kind of overshot your mark a little bit, so. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're having fun with what they do, so. Just not a lot of use to me.
All right. Well, I actually, I guess I'm surprised and not surprised that we all kind of agree that it's not a bad term for what it is. So.
Now, did you want to talk about what the other terms he used? Because he ended up breaking it down into the different, basically. Styles of art around neoclassical.
That was kind of funny. That was
I mean, actually, I don't remember that portion. I most of what I remember is the conversation that we were having on Twitter. I didn't actually read his post.
He ended up referring to there was the classical period, and then went into the Dark Ages. That was second edition was the Dark Ages. Then the Renaissance was third edition, and everything around that time. And then neoclassical, and then went into Baroque, which was fourth edition, where he said it was, you know, going overly gaudy and everything like that. And I found it amusing.
Yeah, it was. I think it was a little tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But it was. It's. You know. I don't want to subtract from his term of his use of neoclassical, because I think that's a pretty good fit. On the other stuff, you know, you just kind of take that for what it is. It's funny. I like how he referred to the Gothic period as Vampire and World of Darkness, you know, so it's an obviously.
Yeah. I like that part.
Actually,
I'm bringing up the post now. It was classical, was first edition. The Dark Ages was second edition D&D when TSR went under and D&D went out of publication for a while. Gothic was a Vampire and World of Darkness, obviously. Renaissance 3rd edition, when it came back again, Baroque is 4th edition D&D, emphasizes power and authority, but also extravagantly ornate, florid, and convoluted, and the neoclassical reacting against the Baroque style and recalling the classic style.
That's...
I agreed with him for the most part, except for when he referred to 4th edition as convoluted. I've found the 4th edition is a lot less convoluted than 3rd edition, so that was my only issue with it, but everything else I pretty much agreed with.
You know, the thing is that I'm not a big 4th edition person, but I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been my viewpoint on these things. People, I think we all can take the stance that, you know, the version wars are ridiculous. But, Yeah, I think people just read too much in some of these posts. I think you're right. I think he was trying to be a little more tongue in cheek, and if he wasn't, I'm willing to give him a buy on it. So, I kind of think that will end this this first act. I don't think we have much more to say on the subject. That said, Mark, I think you're up next in Ring 2 with Free RPG Day. Exactly, what was Free RPG Day anyway? I never actually read the link that you sent me, and being a busy guy, I really didn't get around to doing Free RPG Day.
Yeah, it was actually in Atlantis Games in Portsmouth, Virginia. Must have been about a week ago, and one of the guys who worked there came up and said that they were having Free RPG Day on Saturday, which I knew nothing about. So I actually went online and checked it out, and if you go to freerpgday.com, that'll tell you, hopefully... It'll tell soon when next year's is going to be, because it was on the 20th, which is the day we're recording right now. According to the site, for Free RPG Day, Impressions Advertising and Marketing, which is the company, works with hobby game retailers and RPG publishers to bring new RPG quick start rules and adventure modules into the hands of gamers. Customers worldwide will be able to grab brand new material for a variety of RPGs. No overstock, retail priced, or dead product here. The goal of Free RPG Day is to get gamers inspired to play a new RPG, which will in turn create sales through local game stores. Now, what I thought was interesting is basically right up front they said our goal is to get people to come in and buy games at the game stores. So they tell you right off the bat that they're basically just trying to sell product to you, which I respect. You know, they aren't trying to just say that they're just doing this for the good of the industry. They're fessing up for what they're doing, but it was actually pretty cool. I probably should have gone down to one of the other Atlantis games in another part of town, because they probably would have had more going on. When I went there, they basically just had the product sitting out, and there wasn't anybody really playing anything, which is what I was hoping for. But I basically just grabbed all the products and brought them home and have been looking over them. There's quite a lot here. There's one game called Corporation, which I had never heard of, that's made by Flaming Cobra.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting name.
And,
that's a Mongoose imprint.
There it says mongoosepublishing.com. And that one takes place in the year 2500, and you're basically working for one of the corporations that runs the world. And it actually looks pretty cool, and it's got character sheets already in the book that look like you can cut them right out and they'll be ready to play.
That's always a good sign.
Yeah, and then there was a whole adventure that you could play as well. So actually I'm thinking about, because it explains the basic core rules at the front, I'm thinking about actually getting some buddies together and giving that one a try. Again, that one's Corporation. You can go to corpgame.com for that.
Well, if nothing else, I mean, at least it's a quick quick one-shot game that you can play.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking about using it for, because I don't see myself running a full campaign based on it, but it'd be a cool one-shot to play.
Sounds good. Hey, Mark, you've got them all kind of spread out there in front of you there, or have at some point. Aesthetically, what jumps out at you? I mean, as far as what products there?
Definitely, there was Rogue Trader that stood out. I've got the
That's Dark Heresy role-playing game. Rogue Trader, somebody on the blogging network was asking if they could add that to the list as a subcategory.
Right.
Oh, yeah. But basically, it's just it's an expansion to Dark Heresy, but it's still standalone. Mm-hmm. And it basically has a big ship flying through the warp on the cover. And it's a full introduction with characters and everything. Another one that stood out was the Pathfinder Bonus Bestiary. Mm-hmm. It's got a big, huge snake on the cover that some adventurers fighting, waving his torch at, and that one has just a bunch more monsters for Pathfinder.
Right, that's the only one I was able to get. Picked that up. So
yeah, well,
looks
that,
good.
That I obviously, like I said, I didn't go to anywhere for Free RPG Day. I was a little busy today, but I didn't know was that Pathfinder? Is that still the OGL stuff, or was that already set for the newer edition that's supposed to be out here
in
a couple of months?
I think this is actually for the Pathfinder role-playing game itself. A lot of these, actually, they say on the back that, like, the product is going to be coming out in August. So a lot of them are for products that haven't even come out yet.
Okay. So that's kind of cool. It's kind of, in some cases, some of these things are kind of sort of semi-previews of what will come.
Yeah.
Huh.
Geist stood out just because it's one of the new games by White Wolf, and it's just a black cover with, white and glowing blue around it, says Geist the Sin Eaters, and that one's basically a new game where you basically become possessed by a ghost so that you can go around and basically you're a Grim Reaper. So that's a kind of cool one. And then the one that stood out, I think, the most, just because I play it, is there's a fourth edition D&D adventure by Wizards of the Coast, and it's the adventures for second level characters, and it's written by Keith Baker, who created Eberron, and it takes place in Eberron, and it contains not only 10 encounters, which is, so you're not going to be playing this in one session, it also contains 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 adventurers in the back, so you can play this right out the gate. You don't even have to have any of the books or make your own characters. You can play the characters that are already provided. Plus, it contains a dungeon tile, a brand new dungeon tile, designed specifically for this adventure. So you can add that to your collection of dungeon tiles.
That sounds like a pretty good free product.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah. Well.
So, and then there was a few smaller products. The Hollow Earth Expedition, known as Hex, that has a free adventure and characters and everything for it. Paranoia had a little small booklet for it.
Really?
And yeah, so you can play Paranoia. And there's a couple more. Oh yeah, Dragon Warriors, which is apparently also by Flaming Cobra, the Mongoose guys. It looks like they would describe it as a old school style, easy to play mechanic, unique style and tone game. it's apparently originally from England. It's only now available in US and Canada. And then they also had Hero Labs had a CD that they had that is basically a preview version of it that contains you can make characters in the preview for the Battlestar Galactica RPG, World of Darkness 3.5, Mutants and Masterminds 4th Edition, and Savage Worlds. Now, I have a Mac, and I know that these are actually for PC, but I'll have to pop it into my wife's computer and see how it works. So, all in all, there was a bunch of really good products. I wish that there had been people there actually
playing,
yeah, because I would have loved to get in on a game of it. And
I guess.
But no, that's good stuff.
That's not actually. That sounds good. Sounds like I should have seen if my local game store actually did free RPG Day. I'm sure they would.
What you can do is if it wasn't too busy, I would swing by there within the next couple days and just ask them if they have any leftover product.
See if you can't pick something up.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, they're never... actually, my local game store is pretty good. They're a little lean just because, well, let's face it, the economy isn't great for people buying games. If anyone who reads my blog knows, I went to RandomCon, and they weren't even invited. The people who ran RandomCon actually didn't ask any of the local game stores to come.
Wow.
There were like three vendors at RandomCon for where I was, and this was a first-year con, and me and my friends were all like, what? And, you know, one of my friends knows the people who run the game store, and he asked them about it, and they were like, you know what? They never invited us to come. It's like, okay, big mistake there. So, if you can, as we say, let's try to support our local game stores because, well, even though sometimes they're a little more expensive, without those guys, sometimes we don't get the get to see products or get to play with products or, let's face it, just meet new gamers.
Yeah, the only books that I haven't bought from a local game store were when 4th edition came out. I bought all three books on Amazon for about half the price I would have paid at the game store. But that's a big purchase. Everything else, every other one of the 4th edition books I've gotten, any other rule books, I've always gone to the local game stores because I used to work at a role-playing game store, and I know how important that is.
Yeah, it's nice to have the gamer pool that an FLGS provides, you know, if for no other reason than that. So
yeah, I just like going and geeking out and talking to all the other gamers.
Yep. Swapalize, yep.
Well, yeah, that's a very good point. And so, at the very least, this should have been a good way to get all those guys together in a way.
Yeah.
Because I know that for myself, every time I've tried to get a group together from like nothing, it's very hard to find gamers. And I don't know why that is so difficult. It's, you know, people say, well, there's this resource and this online resource and that online resource. It's like, you know what? People, I'm going to show my age. Back in the day, I used to do a lot of BBSing. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to dial up on a 2400 baud modem and connect up to bulletin board systems. Mm-hmm. So, but the interesting thing about it was that you would dial, you know, almost everywhere I lived, there would always be at least one local bulletin board system that was set up around RPG games. So, you know, if you put a post up there, you knew it was local. You know, you knew what the people's interest was. Matter of fact, when I lived in Portland in, 1993, 94 time frame, they actually, in their area, they have like six or seven bulletin boards, and they actually had their own message network so that you posted on one bulletin board's message board, it would end up on every other message board that was connected. It was kind of like the old, obviously, I don't know how, like I said, I don't know how most people are even familiar with the old PBS stuff, but the old FidoNet used to be like that, but it used to be a lot larger. But, I mean, that's the way people used to do things before the internet became, well, as ubiquitous as it is now.
Yeah.
But one of the things I've noticed is that as we've moved to the internet, and this is not entirely bad, but the problem that I've always found is that when you go to try to post stuff to find players, it gets really difficult because you really are not reaching the audience that you're trying to reach because your audience is a very smaller subset than what the internet represents.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so in that case, your best bet still is go to the game store, talk to the people. As silly as it sounds, put your thing on the little cork bulletin board. I mean, sometimes low tech is the only way to go in these things. So
the worst thing that could happen is you could have a miserable game like I've had a couple of times doing that.
Oh, trust me. I think we've all had miserable players. So
yeah, absolutely. One other thing just to touch on the FLGS and the various ways of online of contacting people is, I think sometimes those of us who are kind of more involved with it online tend to forget that we're sort of the exception, not the rule. You know, for every one of us that blogs, that's online, frequents a message board quite a bit, there's a lot of gamers out there that really don't do any of that stuff, that are kind of more casual. You know, they might come in to their local shop for a CCG tournament or to buy comics or something. And yeah, they'll play a game, but they're not going to, you know, check RPGNet's board every week to see if there's a new game starting in their area, or they may not know what nearby gamers are. So it is, you know, so.
Yeah, I know. I don't even read RPGNet. for the part. You know, it's one of those weird things where I think, and this is still a digression, but important, I think that's why blogs kind of took off, because for most people, it's really hard to sit there and sift through the forums.
Yeah.
And many ways, as bloggers, and now as podcasters, we kind of, I won't say bring the cream of the crop to the bunch, but it's easier for the average consumer, if you will, to actually get that information from those type of sources than to try to manually sift through, you know, 6 million
yeah.
posts in a forum.
Well, back I had time to do that back when I worked at the game store, because I would just sit there and while I was working and be able to do that. But now, you know, with a real legitimate job, it's a lot harder, and I don't have the time or the energy to really spend all my time on the WotC message boards or the EN World message boards, wandering around trying to find information on different things.
Absolutely. Not to sound too, I guess, blogocentric or whatever you want to call it, but I think, you know, just as with getting older, in my experience, you know, with having, you know, we got kids now and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't have the time to sit through 47 different posts about, you know, this or that. I want coherent thoughts. If I want to comment, that's fine. I've got a network, you know, but there's go-to people now. And I like that aspect of it. Not to say that message boards don't have their place, because, you know, they do.
Oh,
but
yeah.
just from a personal standpoint alone, you know, the whole RPG bloggers network and everything has been a lot more useful to me in recent years, or in the recent past year rather.
Okay, people, for those that are listening, yes, we are all on the RPG bloggers network, and we're very popular. We're very favorable to it, if you will.
Yeah. I check it every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I check it every day, even though my company blocks, that I work for, actually blocks my access to that website.
Mine started doing that too, just like a couple weeks ago, so I gotta wait till I get home, but I still check it.
Well, actually,
luckily the Navy still hasn't started blocking, so
good. Luckily what I've done is, through another website that I have, and since I'm a PHP coder, I wrote a script that has a page that actually uses their web server to pull the RPG page across and then display it on me.
tricky.
Yeah, so they haven't blocked that website yet, so I'm okay. I think that covers Free RPG Day and then some. Unless
go to it next year.
Yeah. You know what? I think I will. I think we're going to have to mark that on our calendars, and we will announce it and let people say, "You go," kind of thing.
That sounds good.
All right.
Sounds great.
And finally, for all those wonderful people in the audience that are listening, we have Ring 3 brought to us by Zach. And he's going to give us some thoughts on Palladium Games, one of the perhaps what I like to say granddaddy games, if you will.
I started with Palladium. Was that Palladium Fantasy was actually my first RPG back in 1993. The guy I played with, you know, it was one of those junior high games where you look back and it's like, why am I even a gamer? You know, why did I enjoy this hobby when we were just so stupid? He had me roll up a character. It probably took, at least an hour. You know, just every little thing. And then he had me killed with an asteroid within the first 5 minutes of play. I think he was just tired, didn't want to play anymore. But, you know, despite that, I'm still here. So, you know, I got a lot of history with Palladium, and I play other games. I should have asked before the session, have either of you guys played any of Palladium's titles, Rifts, Palladium Fantasy?
Well, let's see. Let's see. Actually, I should say I tried to do some Robotech a long time ago, because when I was growing up, I was a big Robotech freak. I did a little bit of the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game, and I owned another title by Palladium, but I can't remember what it was. But after that, not really. I mean, they always seemed to be a wannabe clone of some of the D&D stuff I was doing. Although they had a huge wealth of material. So, and Rifts just never appealed to me. The whole concept of Rifts just kind of went out and then left field. And my thought on Rifts has always been the one thing. I was in a comic book / game store because, well, for some reason, they kind of go together one time. And what I found was this guy was looking at the Rift stuff, and some guy comes over and says, oh, this new book is out. And the other guy says, yeah, I know. Do you know anyone who plays? And that was basically their conversation, is they were both arguing that they couldn't find anyone who actually played Rifts. It's like people just collected the material or something.
It is a collector's game in a large part. Not that it's not played as well, but...
I've never played it. I've only heard the horror stories.
Yeah, I know. Some of our, I guess, fellow podcast colleagues, Fear the Boot, like to, joke about Rifts a lot. And, you know, some of that's well-deserved. You know, the system is a little clunky, okay, showing its age. And, you know, there are certain, how do we say this? You know, some of the books are in sort of a more archaic style. You know, it's not exactly cutting-edge publishing values and everything. But, I got to thinking this week, you know, I was looking through my Palladium Fantasy books and everything, and I started thinking about why I continue to come back to Palladium. And my first thought is, well, Zach, you're a glutton for punishment. You know, and that may be true, but there's something about Palladium where they have this enthusiasm in their games. You know, you set aside the system, you set aside any of the, you know, online stuff, all the arguments and everything, and you read one of their books and it's like, man, they are really excited about this. You know, they seem genuinely thrilled about what they have to share with you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost, I want to say it's almost like a innocent sort of enthusiasm, you know, like they don't realize they're supposed to be edgy or, you know, more polished or something. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, we thought of this, you know. Of course, the old bear with lasers sort of illustration, you know, like, isn't this awesome? You know, it's like I explained to it on my side. You know, some books read, you know, like an old academic text. You know, some are kind of a warm and engaging style. Some are very authoritarian. You know, some sound like some guy just, you know, reading just horrible poetry to you, you know. Palladiums almost read like, if you ever watched WWE or something, it's like two incredibly excited wrestling announcers who cannot believe everything that's happening in front of them. That's kind of the tone you get with a Palladium product. And, you know, I can see where that would grate on some people over time, but I really enjoy it. You know, it's like they're enthused about their product, and that makes me sort of it does make me enthused about their product. You know, it's like, yeah, okay. And I think it's kind of about, with Palladium, it's learning to let your guard down and, I guess, engage in the retro stupid, as Jeff Reince would call it. You know, just be willing to kind of give in and say, okay, yeah, let's do this. I know that probably doesn't make any sense, but we're just going to kind of – we're going to go roll with it and see where we get.
I think that can be said for a lot of games. I think a lot of us gamers out there get a little too – I'm going to use the word pretentious again just because, well, I actually remember how to pronounce it, and I can actually pronounce it right now. But we tend to get a little pretentious about our gaming, and we're like, no, 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 we're not going to do that. No, 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 we need to do this. That's just – no, 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 that's archaic. No, 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 that's just too silly. You know, it kind of reminds me of we have like this persona where we're like these British guys trying to tell everyone else that they're not civilized or something.
Yeah, but you know, Palladium's got its pros and cons like anything else. But I kind of like that there's still a company out there doing that. You know, that still presents their stuff with a, you know, just like, I cannot believe this. You know. He's a half vampire. Yeah. It's the gee whiz factor, you know, being so excited that you have to write about your stuff in exclamation points and italics, and, you know, which if you guys have thumbed through a Palladium book, you know, all of a sudden it'll be like, this weapon does this much damage, and it'll, they are so excited about it, it's in italics and exclamation marks, you know, so it's, you know, it's nice to still have that out there. I think it's one of the reasons I still come back to Palladium despite, you know, loving a lot of other games. It's like, it's kind of got this, you know, it's got this innocent enthusiasm about it that I think some other games would be well served, perhaps not to directly emulate, but at least take notice of.
Yeah, I think I kind of know what you're talking about, even though I'm not a big Palladium person. Mm-hmm. You know what it is? Fun. F-U-N. You know, I think a lot of games just don't realize that it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. You know, we kind of get a little bit, And I think that's why I've never liked the whole, you know, RPG game theory debate, because it's like, it's a game. It's supposed to be fun, you know?
Yeah.
And people go like, no, we're trying to simulate all this stuff, or we're trying to do this, or we're trying to do that. It's like, no. End of story. Is it supposed to be fun? That's why, again, I know I've been preaching this all episode, but there are certain games I don't like. But, you know, if you want to play them, more power to you. If you find them fun, do it. That's the whole purpose. We do this to have fun. If you don't do it to have fun, you probably shouldn't be gaming. That's kind of my stance.
You're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. You know, and if I don't like the way you're gaming, but you're having fun doing it that way, you know what? Don't stop. Don't let me tell you anything different. Because I think that's where we get in trouble a lot as gamers. We try to tell other people how they should be gaming, and it's like, if they're having fun, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think that's what Palladium kind of brings across then, is this fun aspect that I think you're right. I think a lot of games kind of miss the point in that. It's a game. It's supposed to be fun. And Palladium, even though I don't personally care for it, you know, you're right, kind of brings that across.
Yeah. I think they have the guts to put the kid. It's not even have the guts. They don't think anything about it. They just throw in the kitchen sink. You know, it's just unrestrained to that point. You know, there's some games that do that. You know, Encounter Critical. I don't know if either of you guys have done that. Cumberland Games.
It looks phenomenal. I want to play it sometime.
It is tremendous, and it kind of has the same thing. It's just, it's like, you're laughing and rolling your eyes while you're reading it, but then when you're playing it, yeah, you still might be laughing and rolling your eyes, but, you know, by damn if you're not having a good time doing it. So I enjoy that. I enjoy kind of that, you don't hold anything back. And, you know, there's a time and a place where you may not want that, but it's okay to have it out there.
Right. I mean, there should be all kinds of games. I mean, that's why... That's why, while I like the OGL license and I like the D20 products to a certain degree, I'll be the first to say that the D20 system was not meant for every genre out there.
Yeah. I've tried running it for every genre, and it doesn't work.
Absolutely not. There's quite a few that it doesn't make sense for, and it really grates me when people say, oh, it's supposed to be for everything. Yeah, you know, there are games that try that. I mean, I'm a big fan of Champions, believe it or not, even though I don't play it that much. But I will even admit that, to me, the hero system, not every genre does it quite fit. And GURPS, same thing. Not a big GURPS fan, but one set of rules can't do it all. That was the whole reason back in the classical period, I guess is what we're calling it. There were so many game systems with so many diverse systems, with so many thoughts about how a game system could be run.
And I think you also had multiple people who had a different idea of what does it all means. You know, if this game does it all, well, for me, you know, for someone who enjoys, you know, a more rules-heavy game, it might be to, you know, calculate wind speed when you fire that arrow. On someone else, it just might mean, yeah, I get to roll a few dice and beat up bad guys, and I might be wearing a cape, or I might be wearing a wizard hat. You know, so it's different levels of detail and everything. But, yeah, there's no universal RPG for all tastes, you know?
I think it really depends in the end on what style of game. Like, I'm sure Palladium probably works perfect for any genre if you're the type of person who wants to just go in and kick ass and look awesome while you're doing it. Whereas, like, GURPS works great if you want to, like you said, calculate wind speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's fine. But, you know, that's the hobby, is that we can't just let everyone be, you know? It's like, yeah. Hey, we wouldn't have anything to talk about, right? You know?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
We gotta kick their sandcastle. I mean, yeah.
Sandcastle. Actually, you know, I build my castles out of Hearst art blocks. So.
Rock on. Is that a plug? Did we have our first advertisement? I didn't.
No.
Hey, if they'll send us free product, I'll plug them all day, man.
I'd love to use some Hearst. I just got a copy of the World Works games.
Yeah.
They're chunky dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
Are they?
I think I need to get some guys together to put those together, because I tried to put together one of them, and
it's time consuming.
Spent about 15 minutes. Yeah, I spent 15 minutes on one. I think it was a 2 square by 8 square hallway, and I was bored by the end of it. So I think I need to get some guys together to just sort of spend an entire day sitting down and knocking out as much stuff as we can, and then.
Well, I'll tell you what's more even more boring than that is actually mixing the plaster and pouring the molds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I actually spent months doing that before I actually was able to sit down and put stuff together. And it's not for everything. It really is for specialty items. You know, plus you can't transport that stuff, but I love it just because it's cool looking when you're done.
Oh, yeah.
So,
do you have pictures up on your site?
No, I don't. I don't have anything, unfortunately, because a lot of the stuff I've kind of given away or I've destroyed.
Oh, okay.
For various things. I should. That's kind of, I should actually do more of that. And
I'd love to see pictures of this.
You know what?
Yeah, I would too.
I think for a future podcast, I definitely will talk more about the Hearst Art stuff.
Oh, cool.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds like a fantastic idea. I'll make that note. Mm-hmm. So, do we have any other final thoughts on Palladium before we wrap it up?
You know, I think that's pretty much all I had for it, you know. If any Rifts players are listening, you know, all you really need in life is anything with the suffix plasma at it, so. As you know, so.
Go Glitter Boys.
Yeah.
Is that a... I take it those are all mega damage weapons or whatever?
My goodness.
MDC is what they classify?
Mega damage. If you've got plasma added onto something, it's just like 5,000 times more awesome. You can have a sword or you can have a plasma sword. You can have a grenade or a plasma grenade. You kind of see where it goes. So I just like, there's nothing, you know, just, you know, the fight's going to be a little tougher, just add plasma. So, but no, that's all I've got.
All righty. So here's a part of the program that in the future we hope to actually listen to listener questions and comments and even emails. However, being that this is our first podcast, we don't actually have that option. So we had hoped to originally put out an introductory episode where we would talk about ourselves, but, we just never got around to that. So instead, we would love to hear your questions or comments on the show. You have two methods. You can actually email us at info@rpgcircus.com. That's right, info@rpgcircus.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail. Yes, there is this fantastic thing we call voicemail. And if you do, you actually may hear your voice or comments online in a future podcast. Our voicemail number is 1-888-643-6322. Again, 1-888-643-6322. And when you leave a message, you're going to get limited to about 5 minutes. If you do over 5 minutes, you're going to get cut off. So we'll see how that goes. If we need to lengthen that out, we will, but for now, I think 5 minutes is more than enough to get your point across and let us know how you like us, hate us, whether or not you agree with anything we've said, or heck, if you just have a topic for us, we'd love to hear from you, and you can actually tell us what you have on your mind. Anything else you gentlemen would care to add before we strike the tents?
Not that I can think of. I'm looking forward to more of these episodes.
Oh, absolutely. Me too.
Yeah. Okay, so for all those listening out there, we are going to go ahead and strike the tents and put away the circus animals. We didn't actually have any on the show this today, but we hopefully will have some in the future for you. And we will hopefully hear from you in the future. RPG Circus is released under a Creative Commons 3 Attribution License, U.S. For more information about the Creative Commons license, please go to creativecommons.org.